This is 8-10-12, a podcast about Eurovision, and in this episode we're going to be discussing the semi-final allocation that has just taken place. We're going to be discussing Destination Eurovision, as well as a couple of the songs that have been announced all throughout the last week or so, ahead of national selections in Norway, Australia, and many more. You're very welcome to 8-10-12.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Russell. Another episode and another whirlwind week in Eurovision land.
It has been. Yes. It's been a bit of a day as well. We're recording this today on Monday, the 28th of January.
Where has January gone? Everybody asks as they have dredged through the longest month.
Whether you were dry or whether you were plant-based, you were almost there. We've just been getting excited about Eurovision. Yeah. And there's been a lot to get excited about.
Absolutely.
So just finished live, there was the semi-final allocation for the contest in May. That was exciting.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it exciting, but it's good to have an update, especially when... Where are the tickets?
Yes.
Where are the tickets?
You just wanted to live your ASMR fantasy right there, didn't you?
No. I think it's good to have an update. It's good to be that step closer to May.
And it's just the progress of it all, isn't it, at the end of the day. So the main takeaway from it is I was hoping for semi-final two for Ireland, myself.
Yes.
And my wish was granted.
I think that's because you want to get those UK votes, right?
Well, the UK will be definitely voting for us, you know. In exchange for the backstop, we'll definitely be getting all those votes. We're not a thorn in the side of this whole thing, but that's another matter. Let's not get politics into Eurovision.
Another thing that we're up against is our arch nemesis, Sweden.
Yes.
Who Ireland obviously loves, but also hates because...
We don't hate.
We don't want you to take our record. So it could be a who's in Ireland or Sweden in the second semi-final.
Hopefully both.
Yeah, hopefully both.
Yes, but who knows?
Some... Healthy rivalry is always good.
Yeah. Since we've last spoken, there has been a couple... Not me and you, Patrick. We speak every day. But I mean, you listening. Since we last spoken, there's been an influx of artist revelations and reveals and announcements.
Scandals?
No scandal just yet. Yeah. We'll see. But we've had a lot. We've had songs from Spain. We just had a listen to the Spanish song.
Mm.
It's quite up tempo. Quite exciting.
The thing that I said instantly was, this is so confident from Spain. Closely followed by, God, this is laddie.
It's laddie.
Very, like a football song or something. Like, yo, 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 yo. That kind of thing.
What football match are you at?
I don't go to football matches, but that's how I imagine they sound.
Yes.
It's a bit hooligan-y.
Okay. God, sorry, Spain.
In a nice...
It's in my head.
Wait, yeah.
Yeah, it's in my head. It is. If you said this was Moldova, you might believe it. But I like it. I think it's, as you say, it's a very confident entry from Spain. And, you know, they've been hit and miss over the years with different styles,
varying styles
each time. And I'm excited for it. It's gotten a good bit of attention. A lot of people like it. It's good fun. And I think we'll just add a bit of extra energy. I'm not going to say energy. I'm going to say extra energy to the final because already a lot of the songs sound quite up-tempo.
Who is your favourite Spanish entrant from the past few years?
Can I say Bandito? Just because of the false start,
that
please.
That was not the past few years.
Well, no, because I wasn't even born then, was I? No, I would have just been born.
Yeah,
I would have just.
I'm sure you remember it vividly.
Oh yeah,
that's why I love timing, girl.
That's why I love Corolla so much. My favorite Spanish. I do like Say Yay. Mm-hmm. I know you don't.
The minute I heard that, I was like, I hate this, and it never improved. No matter how much I heard that, or no matter what they threw at the performance, I was just like, I don't get it.
But it ended up onto our Spotify most played of that year.
That's because it's a joint account, and I wonder how it ended up at the top of that list.
Other returners or declarations that we've got. Malta has an artist, but not a song, because they won X Factor Malta at the weekend.
The very first series of X Factor Malta ever.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant, isn't
it? The first ever winner.
Oh, hopefully it doesn't go downhill too quick like the UK. But anyway, that's actually on the running order here.
Okay.
Talk about the downfall of the X Factor in relation to Eurovision. This is a four-hour podcast. Mm-hmm. We've also got San Marino.
A surprise twist, because everybody was expecting the Ken doll.
And us.
And us, and every other person alive on Earth.
Yeah, anyone who could Photoshop their face into a graphic with the San Marino logo in the Dare to Dream motif.
Dare to Dream, it could be you.
It could be you.
But no, it won't be, because we're going to choose a previous artist.
And
instead,
it's Sirhat, who is great, from 2016. Yeah. A great artist, really good fun.
I loved
fun.
That song.
Same, I love it too. So actually, I'm really excited. Well, really, it was only one of two people at the end of the day.
Well.
Yeah, she's busy.
She'll probably still be the spokesperson.
Oh,
hey.
Yeah, exactly. We've got an artist for the Netherlands. Yes. Tamara for Macedonia. Now, on the semi-final selection, it did say FYR Macedonia. The news is saying it's North Macedonia. It says Macedonia on some websites.
It'll take time to do the handover of the name thingy.
I don't know, but I'm just calling it Macedonia for now.
Because how far along are we on the Czechia thing?
Oh, that's old news, honey.
But are they changing it or what?
I don't know.
Yeah, so these things take time.
This is Czech Republic. But we also have a song for the Czech Republic. Oh, God.
We'll get to that. So Tamara.
Yeah.
Is a previous contestant,
yes,
right? Yeah. A few times.
Yeah. So that's exciting.
As was her sister.
How do you know?
Or something about that. I see these things online.
Google it. And we've an artist from Belgium as well. And we've just listened to the Czech Republic song. Save yourself a few moments. Don't.
Oh.
I hate it. Although I have. I have.
You
since
can't say don't listen to it.
Because people might listen to it then. Because if you tell someone not to do something, they're more likely to do it. The thing is,
it's unusual.
It's unusual. It sounds like a cross between the Kooks and the Streets in a way. Only because he has an English accent, a very English accent. And you will be going, friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, friend of a friend of a friend.
I won't, but yeah.
It sounds like a theme song of a BBC One Saturday night game show, friend of a friend.
So as you're speaking about English accents and the BBC,
yeah,
we also got our acts and our songs.
Yes, indeed.
From the BBC Eurovision You Decide format of this year. So this is their fourth year.
Yes.
Right?
Third?
And fourth.
Fourth?
So we had Joe and Jake.
Oh, that's why I forget it.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. It is
so
the fourth year.
So we had Joe and Jake.
Yeah.
Then we had
Lucy. Then we had Suri.
Lucy and Suri.
Do you know what's terrible? We were at two of them and I forgot about I forgot about them. Anyway, and yeah, this is the fourth.
So, but this year they've changed the location, they've changed the format. I think they're all good changes.
Yes.
I think it's great to keep it moving. They haven't changed the presenters. They will probably change the expert panel. That's fine.
Can we not have an expert panel? But they're judging it. So the format, explain the format change. Explain the format change here.
So the format change is that there is three songs, but there are six acts. So for each song, it gets two interpretations.
Mm-hmm.
So I think two acts are going to go head to head on the same song, but a unique interpretation each. And then the expert judging panel choose which two progress to the final.
No,
right?
It's which version of each song.
Which
I think
version?
It is. Yes.
Which version? So then,
you have three
the
songs.
The public have three songs to choose from.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah. So,
But no, we've seen this type of interpretations of a couple of options used in other countries, and I think it's a nice twist. I think credit to the BBC, they're keeping it moving, they're changing things up, they're keeping it fresh.
And I think that's so important, because they got a lot of stick for years and years and years when they were sending the Bonnie Tylers
imagine
and Angel Dean Cumberberts.
Oh
my God, imagine years and years, it would be a dream come true. But instead we got Bonnie Tyler. But in those times they got a lot of heat for sending random acts doing it internally and not placing very well. It did a lot of damage to the Eurovision brand in Britain, I would say. And by doing this format a little bit differently, has to be applauded. Doing anything differently has to be applauded. Now, whether it works or not is another matter, because the songs are...
If anybody followed on Twitter on the day that they were announced on the Ken Bruce show, there was a bit of a collective, is this it?
Yeah.
I mean...
Look at the amount of songs that Sweden has.
Yeah.
And that they have to whittle it down to enough to do all the weeks. And technically speaking, there is 3 songs for Eurovision to choose from. That's the technical thing. Now, I know they weren't sent 3 songs. I don't know for a fact, but I would believe they would send...
It's a pretty big country.
Yes, they would have a lot more than 3 songs. But there's so much musical talent, and this is the argument that comes back every single time. How can Britain, the country which arguably is one of the most successful when it comes to music internationally, you've Ed Sheeran's, you've your Adele's, you've your Coldplay's, Jane McDonald's, and all that of the world, and it's really, really important that that is represented at Eurovision, but it isn't.
No. And if we go back to a thing that we were talking about earlier on in this episode of using X Factor as the vehicle to then earn the right to represent your country, I think you brought this up the other day that the UK should be using that.
Yeah, my point was, and I actually had to stop the discussion with you in the car because... Well, I was like, it's better for a podcast. My theory is, and if you sit down with us and listen to my thoughts.
Have a drink, too.
Have a drink, if
crack
you will.
Open a wine.
Why not? Why not? So basically, Britain's reversal of fortune at Eurovision.
Is this a thesis?
Yes, okay. That's why I'm saying get a drink, okay, you'll need it. Britain's reversal of fortune at Eurovision sort of began around the time when the other side, ITV, started the factory of reality talent shows. Britain last won in 1997, so last hosted 1998. And then the early 2000s, you had your pop stars, your pop stars' arrivals, followed by Pop Idol, followed by X Factor.
Where is the Fame Academy?
On the other side.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Because everyone forget. Now, I loved Fame Academy. I absolutely adored Fame Academy. It was a brilliant idea. But it never
got... ITV show?
No, on the BBC.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it never had the same popularity as the other ones. Mm. Mainly because it was the commitment of it. Mm. It was a nightly show or a couple of times a week type show. It was akin to a Big Brother style show as opposed to Saturday Night Entertainment, which all these other ones are and eventually became weekend viewing too. There's something to be said for the fact that at that time when any aspiring British singer, artist or whatever, mostly singers anyway, because these competitions, except Britain's Got Talent, it was about your vocal ability. You could write songs, brilliant, don't care, you're singing covers for the next 6-8 weeks or whatever it is. The fact that those shows were so popular, and I know I sit back saying, oh, remember back in my day when X Factor was big. The other day, Rob Holy, who writes for Gay Times at Eurovision, who is a huge Eurovision fan, posted a video of the X Factor in its heyday. And it was like watching an episode of X Factor All Stars, because it was, you know, you had One Direction, Rebecca Ferguson, Tesco Mary, Wagner,
Cher Lloyd, Tracy,
so many people, just iconic people from X Factor.
The squeaky
Johnny Robinson. I loved him. but there was all these iconic people.
Yeah.
And you're like, that was in one series. And we collectively watched that. That was the best thing to watch
it
on television.
It was must-watch TV.
Yeah.
Must-watch.
And that was the peak. And that was when, you know, Eurovision with Britain wasn't great. You know, you had a couple of moments where it went really well. And the BBC, in fairness, toyed with different ideas, such as the Andrew Lloyd Webber one, which gave us Jade Ewan. You had... a couple of You Decide programs with varying results over the years, but they could never compete with Eurovision.
Mm.
And there is an interesting thing that the two of these come together. And now that we have gotten to a point where we are so tired, skeptical and wary of straight up standing in front of this panel of experts like Robbie Williams. Sorry, I don't like Robbie Williams. And you
and
know,
wife.
Think yes. And then you had the other year where you had Nick Grimshaw and Rita Ora.
Best of friends as well.
Yeah.
So it's like,
so you're just constantly kind of going, this panel of experts standing in front of a room and being judged by them on your singing ability is boring. It's the same stuff. You've the nasty person, the nice person, everything like that. And you get bored of it. Mm. And then people aren't wanting to put themselves forward for that. People think that they're too talented, so they go out on their own. They do YouTube and everything like this. And I just think that the machine that's happened on the other side has damaged the reputation on the BBC side.
Yeah.
And has made it difficult to get young, up-and-coming artists to be part of it, because they don't want to be part of this cycle. And that's why we end up with loads of contestants who are formerly The Voice, formerly The X Factor, and so on and so forth.
And
that is my thesis. Thank you very much.
Thank you for attending this TED Talk.
Yes.
And then on that point, I was kind of like, yeah, in agreement, because for the UK, it is a stream of, okay, X The Voice contestant, X Factor. But it's not the winners. It's not the finalists. Mm. It's the, oh, they crashed out in week two, or oh, they just auditioned and they scraped in to boot camp. It's like, is that the talent we really want to represent the country? I mean,
but you shouldn't then discount someone.
No, it's a great opportunity.
You shouldn't discount someone because they got to boot camp, but they were up against One Direction. You know, that kind of way too. You can't. These people are talented. Every one of those singers who's up for Eurovision, You Decide for Britain, they are all incredibly talented vocalists and singers, and they have their talents. It's just the song doesn't suit them in a lot of ways.
And it kind of stems on from that feeling as if it's a format. It's
yes.
Like, okay, if you only get to week four of X Factor 2017, hey, in 2018 you may be given a song to compete in Eurovision, You Decide.
Yeah.
It just feels as if it's that kind of trajectory is beginning to appear, and I think that's the wariness and the criticism that is easy to have against it.
Yeah.
But in saying that, we love that they're taking a risk on the format and that they're changing things up. Now, of the songs, what are your favourites?
I only have one favourite.
Okay. Okay, so tell me your one favourite and then all of the others that you do not really.
No, Sweet Lies, Kerri-Anne is 100% it for me. There's the other version, which I don't enjoy. It's not for me. I like the dancey poppy version of it. Yes, I'm an absolute tart for that type of music.
Oh my God,
I know.
Yeah.
But I love it. And I'm unashamedly in love with it. I think it's a great song. I think it's a really, really good, uplifting anthem. And I think after a couple of years of beautiful entries, I have to say, Lucy and Siri both were excellent at Eurovision.
Joe and Jake aren't in that category now.
Joe and Jake were sweet boys, but it wasn't great. It was not good, in my opinion. Anyway.
Up until this week, we still play Shine a Light.
Love Shine a Light. Shine a Little Light.
Shine a Light?
Yeah, no, it's Shine a Little Light. That's the one.
Whatever it's called.
Bianca. Yeah.
Robbed,
oh my God.
Robbed.
Yeah. And written by Leona Lewis.
Yes.
And there's actually a beautiful version where Leona Lewis sings it as well on YouTube, which is
a duet.
Yes, a duet of Fab. The dreams. I
no,
love it.
No, I completely agree. I think Kerri-Anne's is the most upbeat. It's the most energetic. It's the most chance, I think, the UK have of actually creating a splash. And then there's people who will say, oh, no, I think this entry has more appeal to the wider public across Europe. Fine, but I think us two are in agreement. That is a song that we imagine will represent.
We actually also joked about this in the cardio today, that about the whole political voting thing. And was it Lucy Jones who tweeted it?
About Ireland.
Yeah, so basically, you know, everyone goes on and on about Eurovision and, oh, it's all political voting and, you know, oh, we don't expect things from people. And I remember Lucy Jones going, hey, Ireland, where's my 12? Or something to that effect. And it's like, so you don't want people to be voting for the neighbours, but you're fine when it happens. And when it doesn't happen, you get angry. Mm-hmm. You know,
how does that work?
It's just like, pick a position and stick with it, please. You know, it happens. And I'm sure the last couple of years, people have been reading into it about how the public vote on the UK's entry in particular. But, you know, we'll see how it goes at the end of the day. It's going to be interesting.
Just a quick update from the UK's neighbour, which is Ireland.
Well, let's just say before that, all this is still going on. The song hasn't been decided by the BBC yet. That's on the 8th of February, woo-hoo. BBC Two, which
from
is...
From Manchester.
From Salford.
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 Yeah.
Apparently, they are very different, actually. They're actually two...
Are they?
Yeah.
Oops, we'll just edit that one out.
No, 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 no. Salford, apparently... Well, I only learned this because when I worked at the BBC...
Is it just a suburb of Manchester?
It's like... I don't quite understand. Someone can explain it. Okay. But basically, there is like... It's like a completely different like borough and authority or something like that.
Hey,
I learned at the BBC, they kept telling us, don't call it Manchester, call it Salford. It's like, okay, where's Salford? Manchester.
Right beside, almost anyway. On...
Yeah, but that's exciting. Mons and Mel.
Beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful.
And that's on which channel?
BBC Two.
BBC Two, 8 p.m.
Yeah.
Cool.
Or is it? Yeah, it's 8. Let's say 8.
Usually it is.
I haven't got the radio times in front of me. Let's go to the neighbour, us.
The neighbour, us, our homeland. Nothing to report. Absolutely nothing yet. And we are... waiting.
Yes.
If they're listening, we're waiting.
Yes. We know nothing at all.
No.
And we are...
hearing whispers.
We've heard a lot of whispers.
Whispers.
There's the Healy's and the Mumbas have been just shaking, waiting, but we've heard nothing officially, and I don't think it'll be too soon before we hear anything.
So you think it'll be a while?
I think it'll be a while. And actually, I think having the semi-final allocation today, I suspected it might be announced before the semi-final allocation, just for the attention, really. But I think now that you know who you're against, if there's choices of songs, I know they don't have the songs, and I know it's all speculative, but there's a lot of big hitters in that second semi-final. You have your Russias, you have your Norways, your Azerbaijan, and your Sweden. They are strong countries, generally, in Eurovision. And... I don't know. I wonder if they're him and hawing over a couple of things.
I'll trust that RTE have the will to emotion and they have an idea.
Yeah.
And I cannot wait to hear who represents us. But on to the next country who's already decided. France, after a 3-week spectacle. I have to commend France. This is only year 2 of Destination Eurovision.
Oh, beautiful.
And wow.
Yep. Let's remember, France has not won in what, 43 years, would that be right?
1977, was it?
So that's a long time since a win. And, you know, go back a little, I'm not going to dwell in the UK, but they won in 1997. It wasn't that long ago. Like, they won more recently than we've won.
Yeah.
So, by a year. But... that's quite interesting that it's been so long, but they have a very different attitude to it. Now, it's not as loved in France as it is in the UK, I've heard from French friends. But seemingly, looking at the show and seeing the interaction online, there's a lot of love for it. So happy days.
Yeah.
Harnessing a new audience for Eurovision and engaging a new audience.
So, what?
Well.
One.
Point of a new audience.
Yes.
He's young.
Yes.
He's young. He clearly has a mobilised fan base who voted in their droves. Me and THs.
Overwhelmingly won.
So if you're getting that kind of engagement with a younger, new generation of Eurovision viewers, happy days. Now.
The performance.
Different, as predicted, from the first semi. Stripped back. Sorry about the burp. Stripped back.
But...
stripped back.
So this is an explicit podcast now, because I can hear all of your inner workings. But no, I think the critique on the first week was you need to bring more of you into the song. Then in the final, it was, here's me age one, here's me age two, here's me age four.
And they didn't have anything after 10, yeah? Is that right?
So that's fine if it's in a national final. That won't work at Eurovision because you're on a stage in front of hundreds of millions and there's just clips of you as a child. It's like,
but so it makes sense with the song.
It does, but I think there's more that they can do to really compete and like really, really compete. I think it's a song that has a message, and we know that over the past few years that has resonated a lot.
It's about, and it's a lovely song. It's about self-acceptance and being proud of yourself and everything like that, which, you know, Eurovision fans will really feel in touch with in a similar way that Toy did that too. So, you know, you're seeing the same themes coming along, but in varying styles.
Yeah.
His vocals were not perfect.
No.
He didn't hit the high note. And as we pointed out in the previous episode of 8-10-12, the studio version is a great track. It's a really great track. So it's a bit of a mystery as to why it's not there yet. But he now has months and months to prepare for this.
Yeah.
And I suspect it will do good.
Yep.
I do not think it will win. I do not think it will do amazing. The jury votes the other day were indicative of
very
that.
Very telling.
He came fifth.
He came fifth, and then in the public absolutely slammed.
Simone's song was absolutely beautiful. Such a gorgeous track.
So you had a reservation about her bringing the emotion to the stage if it won at Eurovision.
Because it's repetitive. You know, you've made this point. When we used to do YouTube videos for Eurovision, don't look them up, and definitely don't comment on them. I'm so tired of going through the comments.
I'm so glad that this year
it's on podcast.
No one can see our faces and comment on them.
Yeah, oh my God, last year the amount of things, it was like, you and your stupid face don't know anything about Eurovision. And then I had a bad dye job one night and I had to do a video. And I got so many negative comments because A, I didn't like X country's song, and B, my hair looked shit. So it was really annoying. So the podcast is nicer. And
the fandom. The fandom. Love it.
But, yes, we point out, I'll give you the credit for once in your life, that in Eurovision, you have to perform this song now, again, and again, and again, for essentially the rest of your life until you die, non-stop. And you will be known for this one song, and you bloody better get used to playing it.
If you win, your fate is sealed, so you better enjoy this song, because you will be singing it in countries across the world forever.
Yeah, and I remember it was a Clang. I remember that time I met Lulu.
You'll have to be more specific.
Well, there was just one time that I met Lulu, winner of the Eurovision for the UK.
I know who Lulu is.
I know. And I have a book, a great book about Eurovision, kind of like it's like an annual, like a Bunty annual off of the 90s, but it's from recently. And I get any Eurovision person who I have the privilege of meeting to sign it. And I gave it to her. Eurovision! You know?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hit a nerve there.
So I kind of was like, okay, so not everyone has the adoration for it, but then you have other people who still love it and still engage with it a lot. That song, Simone's, has a lot of emotion. It was a beautiful track, but she was visibly moved on stage when singing it. By the time it gets to May, after doing all the preview shows, a week of rehearsals non-stop, can she have that same emotion? Possibly. When you have a live crowd in front of you cheering you on, yes, maybe it does get you, but it can be hard. You said you could just laser tears on her face like Estonia did in Goodbye to Yesterday.
I never accused them of lasering tears. I think that was you. But it's been a busy couple of days and weeks in the Eurovision world. So if you agree, if you have thoughts, we would love to know what you think about all of the selection shows and the acts and the songs. If you want to tweet along, it's hashtag 8-10-12-POD, P-O-D.
And that's number 8, number 10, number 12, pot.
Lovely. There's still more to come.
Throwbacks?
No, there's still a couple more. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Look at that.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So, Norway has released songs. I'm not going to discuss them too much because I'm going to wait until...
I've only heard two of them.
Yeah,
of
but
the
we're not...
8 or 10.
Yeah, we'll hang on until the show is on and then we'll discuss it in a future episode. But one of the tracks is incredible. And you did accuse me of fueling hype and I do apologise for it. But I genuinely think if it wins their selection process, it will win the whole thing. And that's just a feeling I have.
It hasn't even been performed live yet. Yeah. And you've already crowned it as the winner.
Only because it's a beautiful song. It's a really, really good entry. And I have a lot
Are you going to tell them which song? Or just keep this like shrouded in mystery?
I was going to say Love Shine a Light, but that's not the name of it. I actually genuinely forgot the name of it for a second. It's called Spirit in the Sky. And that's not the Garrett Gates song.
No. But it is including Tom Hugo, who has... vied to represent many, many times, including last year. And I'm really, really impressed with this song.
Yes.
And I think it's his strongest chance ever.
He is a really beautiful vocalist. We've had his music playing over the last year or so since discovering him. And we think he's great. And actually, it's nice to have his involvement in the song. But we'll discuss it in another week, hopefully, when we're saying. So Norway's entry this year is a really strong chance.
And on that same tangent, Australia's at that process as well. So we know all the acts, we know songs, I've heard snippets.
Now, I thought Australia was doing two shows because it was two dates being put out online. They're actually doing essentially a Eurovision whole process in a couple of weeks' time. So they'll do a jury show on the Friday, they'll have a family show on the Saturday, and then they'll have the actual live show voted by the public. So actually taking it so seriously, which I love that idea of. There is one song in particular called Zero Gravity, which again we've been playing non-stop lately. There's a couple of other really good songs. You had a beautiful one that I cannot remember the name of for the life of me.
Do not ask me to...
It's not Courtney Act.
No.
We didn't like that. Now we can see how it would work. We can see its merits. We can see that if it did get through, how it could be performed and it would get a good reception. And Courtney being, you know, in the business for a good while and doing so many different things between Idol and Big Brother and Drag Race and everything would be brilliant at the, you know, pressing the flesh and meeting people and doing all the press stuff.
Flying her flag.
Absolutely.
But I've reached peak Courtney Act.
I know. After Big Brother, it was like, okay, great, but no.
And then her own show about the dating life and stuff. It's like, okay, I've had enough.
Yeah. So maybe it is too much for us in this part of the world. I think might be a good thing to say, but in Australia, I don't know. I haven't been to Australia yet, so I can't comment for our friends down under. But I'm not a lover of that song, but I am in love with Zero Gravity.
Another thing that we love, and it's a huge tangent, Instant Hotel.
Oh yes, here's an ad for Instant Hotel.
Speaking of Australia, you need to watch Instant Hotel on Netflix, and that's all I'll say.
Okay, let's do a throwback, because we've talked all about this year and some people possibly are like, okay, stop talking about this year, when are you getting to the throwback? So
the year was 1985,
when you were nothing but a sparkle in your parents' eyes.
Sparky Monroe.
Yeah, I know our voices sound old, but we're actually quite young. Thank you.
So, we are transported back to Sweden, to Gothenburg, where they hosted for the first ever time.
Gothenburg hosted for the first.
And we rewatched this contest at the weekend.
We've also rewatched this contest about 100 times, because
it is brilliant. How does one find it, if anybody asks?
There's the Tube of You, which you can go on to, and so many of the contests are there. Now, if you have no problems with commentary, you can often find it with German or Swedish commentary. If you're really lucky, you will get Classic Wogan. Which is always a joy to listen to if you are a Wogan fan in particular.
Hashtag classic Wogan.
I did enjoy Wogan's commentary this year. He actually wasn't in Gothenburg for this contest. He did this down the line from London.
No way.
Yep.
Is it the only exception?
I think it's one of 2 years that he did. Wow. Or yeah, I think he was ill or something the week before. So he actually didn't go to Gothenburg to comment on it. which was quite interesting, but he still did it down the line. But there's a great line at the beginning, that the beginning of the show actually is the best part. I think you can watch the first 8 minutes of 1985 and it's the best piece of entertainment ever. The host is a lady called Lil Lynn Four. I adore her.
She is a forever queen.
Oh, she is. She is. I have to take out my cans here because I'm going over to my vinyl player here. For copyright reasons, I can't add music in, but if I'm playing it in the background, I probably can get away with it. This is a song of hers from...
It's not her song, though.
She wrote it, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was an old Swedish song.
There she is on the back of the vinyl. Lil Lynn Four wrote "Musique sa brigas ut glav." My joy is built in bricks and music is the name of the song, and it is a really fun opening for Eurovision, and it is probably one of the most unique Eurovisions of that era, I would say. Because it was all about her.
I think if you're talking about presenters who had the personality to host it on their own,
yeah,
she is an icon.
She's just a sweet singer at the end of the day. Yeah. But she was iconic. She had great comedic timing. She had great one-liners. The great thing about this Eurovision, and it was a few of the years that we've watched back, is the hostess sits at the side of the stage. Like, as in, she's like... right there the entire performance, and every time a camera goes to the side, she's just there like bopping away in her chair. You know, it's quite weird to see nowadays when the presenters
it's
are
a bit old-fashioned.
It's
yeah.
so old-fashioned, and she has a little card with the flag, and she'd be like, next up is Ireland. Beautiful country, isn't it? Or the funniest one was with Sweden when it was Kiki Donaldson.
Yeah.
And the song is called Bra vi Brambruna. And she says, no, it doesn't mean that.
Yeah, it is not what you think it means. It actually means good vibrations.
And if you are into your classic Eurovision entries from Sweden, as thousands of you are, Kiki Donaldson beat Pernilla Wahlgren. I didn't call it the other name by accident. With the song Piccadilly Circus, which has that really super high screeching note in it that gets played every so often. And Pernilla is last year's Swedish entry's mother.
Wow.
So there you go. All these links.
The more you know.
Yes, it's a good link.
But enough about Sweden, because that year was all about Norway.
It was all about Norway. Though, let's do the connection to Israel. Because Israel was a great song.
Isaac Cohen.
Isaac Cohen, a returning winner. The 1978 winner came back.
Alphabeta?
No.
No?
Was he Alphabeta?
Yeah.
Yes, he was. Sorry, yeah. And
you nearly made me question.
Yeah, sorry.
My knowledge. There,
it's because it's so quick with these podcasts. You have to just know. It's like, God, you need more notes than what I've got here. But he was the winner in 78, and his song didn't do as well. But we think it's better.
Ole ole.
Ole ole. You think that the girl who is dancing in the blue is the reason why they lost? Because in the first ole ole, she screams so out of tune.
Such a bum note. It is like, whoa. And then they, in fairness to them, they very quickly turned off whoever's mic that was. And then the performance soared. But yeah, that was a real issue.
Yeah. Watch it. It's a really fun song.
The dancing in tandem. Oh my God. Wow.
I can't listen to that song without dancing. I spin around in the kitchen to it. I love it. But Norway was the story of the night.
Yes.
Norway. Bobby Socks.
Bobby Socks.
And Let It Swing. Let It Rock and Roll.
Yes.
Beautiful song. But it was their first ever win.
Yeah.
The bum note of the butt joke. Oh, jeez. Oh, sorry. I just picked up this bum note off the sofa.
As you tend to find those.
The butt of so many Eurovision jokes, because they had so many losings, final placements is probably the proper expression.
They've come last most.
They came last 6 times before it.
Yeah.
So it was quite a moment that they did win. And it's a great song.
It's a great song.
It's iconic.
I think at the time, it was a throwback song. Mm. It was a throwback to the 50s and to the 60s and the flowy dresses, and it had a kind of old quality to the song, which was unique and different, I think.
And it's one of the only songs that really stands out from that year. Yeah. It was a clear winner, but the results didn't give it a clear win either.
No.
So, you know, in hindsight, it obviously was going to win.
Yeah.
But it's a brilliant, brilliant track. And it's upbeat, a great...
It's fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so many things. And it's an iconic song. And I know the word iconic gets batted around so much, but it is.
And the dresses in the black and purple are iconic.
Oh, absolutely. Now,
if you go to the ABBA Museum in Stockholm, there is the Barbie dolls in a glass cabinet just inside the entrance, with so many iconic, to use your phrase there, entrants whose clothes have been recreated on Barbies.
And it's amazing.
And they are definitely
Isn't Lil Lilinfors?
She is.
Yes, with her dress falling off.
Yes.
Now, that happens after the interval and all this type of stuff. There's a scene where she walks out and it looks like the set has pulled a bit of her dress away, and she's just there in half a dress and her underwear. And she goes, and then just pulls down a tear away. It was like Drag Race 1985. It was fantastic.
It was a gimmick.
It was such a gimmick, but it worked. It was so clever. Elizabeth Andreasen, who was part of Bobby Socks,
is a prolific Eurovisioner.
I have a list here.
Okay, here we go.
So that wasn't her first time competing, because she also competed in 81 and 82 in the Melfest. She did compete
Chips,
as
right?
Chips, the best band name in the world.
I can't believe I hadn't thought of that myself.
And so in 82 competed as part of Chips for Sweden, then 85 for Bobby Socks. Then Norway in 1994 and 1996, and then did Melfest several times after that. It just loves.
The year that she competed for Norway with E. Effige,
yeah,
she came runner-up or
second.
Third. Yeah. So almost
beautiful track too.
Won again.
Yeah.
So a real force at Eurovision.
And kind of going back to what we were saying before, someone who has a lot of love for the contest and has continued to show that, and probably owes a lot of her career to Eurovision naturally, because of winning with Bobby Socks and everything like that, but has a beautiful voice, a great singer,
unlike Lulu
true,
appreciates
it
where she came from.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the 60th year of Melfest next year. So I wonder if there'll be a lot of throwbacks and all that type of stuff. Who knows? Hope you enjoyed the little throwback. If there's any contest you're like, oh my God, talk about this and dissect the living daylights out of this one, hashtag #A1012pod, and we'll see if we can source it online, because we watch whatever selection show we're watching of the week, and then we pop a Eurovision on of a Saturday or a Sunday, and it's just so much fun to relive it and just get back into the fun and the rigor of Eurovision in the months and weeks beforehand.
I mean, to us it's a year-round contest. It isn't just 3 days, it isn't just 1 week in May. No. it is
our life.
Love affair. If you've enjoyed this, please let us know. We are on all social media as @GastroGaze, or you can check out our blog gastrogaze.com.
and still to come this week, there's a lot of exciting things still to happen. Melfest happens Saturday. It begins in Gothenburg. Lol.
Lol. LMAO.
God, Russell, shut up. Russia is announcing on the 1st.
Oh, now, and we've heard.
Oh, the rumours. So, apparently, Sergei Lazarev, I get that right, because this foreign minister is also a Sergei, and I keep getting the two of them mixed up. He is coming back, allegedly.
From Stockholm 2016.
Yes.
Entered.
And then, but it won't be solo.
Oh.
The rumours, wait for it, the rumours are that he'll be joined by a soprano, who I've not heard of, and apologies for getting her name wrong, Anna Netrebko. My Russian isn't as good as my English, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's gone very sloppy.
And they'll be joined as well by a shady lady.
What?
Yes, Annie Lorac. Allegedly.
Okay, hold the phone. I think that needs, if that happens, an entire episode of
absolutely
its own.
Shady Lady is our favourite Eurovision song of all time. Now it is Ukraine, not Russia, but let's not get into that.
But you've got one icon of Russia yep. of recent years and one icon of Ukraine in yep. recent years. So this could be magic.
And Russia, turn it out.
They turn the party.
We'll forget the last couple of years, but they turn it out. They really do Eurovision well, we have to say. So if that is the case, this could be a very, very exciting entry being revealed in the the 1st of February. And then, yeah, Saturday's Melfest, Nano from 2017 and Victoria from 2016 and 17 also competing. So that should be fun. So that is all then from this week's edition. I say this week, we could just put a podcast up tomorrow if we felt like it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're kind of hitting the stride now of tons of announcements, tons of acts,
yeah.
updates from the 2019 contest. So yeah. it is a few months to just under 100 days.
No,
over 100 days. Days
yeah.
until the
actual contest
Eurovision kicks off. So we will be updating you all the way along.
Thank you so much for listening to 8, 10, 12. See you next time.
Bye.